And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second interview this evening. And we are interviewing our author for this evening. And it is Saskia Rowell, who is the author of A Suitcase Full of Faith. Now, I read this book, and it's definitely self-autobiographic. It is an incredible story that really allows you to understand, you know, some of us lack faith. And I think, you know, reading this story allows us to sort of renew our faith in maybe ourselves, in God, in our spiritual connection. But, you know, Saskia had quite the journey. And, you know, a lot of it sort of occurred in 2001 when her and her husband and five young children took this daring leap of faith, sold their house in Holland, and gave up a thriving business to explore new possibilities in the States. So welcome, Saskia.
Thank you so much, Lori, for having me. I'm very happy to talk to you and love to, you know, share about my life and how I see it.
Well,
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and definitely your book is all about your life and how everything is sort of unraveled for you, which it kind of comes in a way that's, you know, a lovely opening to understanding faith and the title that you created. So typically what I start with is, you know, just you sort of talking about your journey. Now your whole book is your journey, but is there any defining moment that sort of brought you on this path and this journey that, you know, really defined it for you?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because this morning I had a question from someone and she said, you know, how come you have so much trust? And the interesting thing is here that when I wrote the book and at the end of the book, when I was finished with writing, I looked back myself and I said, why do I have so much faith? And it became really clear to me that actually I've been building faith from probably when I was like 4 years old, that I started kind of this play with the universe or God, as you will. Like, okay, I could clearly feel like my gut feeling, I think I should go left or I should go right. I should do this or I should do that. And then I would kind of dare the universe and say, okay, you want me to do this, but you got to support me. You have to show up here and help me. And over time, as you can probably, you read that in the book, my faith has been strengthened. It's like this muscle has been built, because time after time after time, I was supported in going after every dream, in going after every direction I had in my gut, like, you got to go do this and do that. And it came to this, I think, this big muscle of trust and faith that I have now, that we can take the leap and, you know, go after our dreams, and we are supported. And I think that defining moment is kind of has built in little steps, you know, and has grown into this enormous faith I have.
Wow. You write a lovely phrase in your book that you have this deep longing to be in tune with the rhythm of your heart, living in sync with the song of your soul.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and to me, it's time after time, Lori, that when I'm out of rhythm, when I'm not in sync with my soul, which of course I am at different times, then it comes clear to me that I don't feel the joy, I don't feel happy, and usually when I'm in that connection, we feel happy and joyful, and then we're in sync with our soul, and that's, to me, a very important message, to live from the compass of our soul. It's such an adventure.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's it. Like, a lot of people say, you know, you want to start creating what you want, you know, start small. Start small, build trust, you know, then things happen for us. And I guess if you started when you were four.
Yeah, I think I started when I was four. And one of the stories is where I overcame fears, and I was always kind of like, I think a part of me, like this big self or soul, however you call it, was walking next to me and daring me to step out of my comfort zone and trying new things and letting go of fear. So I played a lot with myself and with the universe in my development, and still do, of course. And I think we have to take the leaps and take the steps, and even if it's a baby step, but do it. Do it anyway, and get out of our comfort zone. I think that's huge.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talk a little bit about the fact that we sort of weave this tapestry of our story. And part of it, though, is unraveling what the story is that we sort of created.
Right.
That's false.
Yeah. And for me, I had this story like, well, I don't know if I can write that book. And, you know, of course, I sat down and I could write a book. It was a story which was based on an illusion because I thought, well, my dad was not a writer and my mom was not a writer. So subconsciously I thought, well, then, you know, why would I write? And clearly my soul was urging me and nudging me like, go do it. You've got a story to tell. And, you know, it's like take that step.
Mm-hmm. And what would be the karma weaves?
What?
What would be the karma weaves in that story that we create?
Well, I think with our karma, the way I see it, it's more like life lessons we can learn. You what you sow, you reap.
Mm.
And, I mean, maybe you can sow something, and in the end, what you reap is the life lesson you face. And you know, and I don't see karma necessarily as a negative thing. It's a lot to learn there.
Right. Absolutely.
There's a lot of good karma, too. And it's like following the leads. That's how I see life, like, it's almost like you follow the breadcrumbs, and it can be karma or a lesson you have to learn or a roadblock, but you keep on walking because you kind of know this is the road you're on and you want to explore further because some gut feeling points that way.
Mm-hmm. Now you talk about how we long for the experience of connecting with one another and that's part of that weave.
Yeah, I think we are all connected, and in our connectedness, that's where we grow. I mean, we need each other in that sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all together, and especially if we can tap into our heart, connecting to each other from heart to heart is to me so important. I think that's the most lovely communication we have, and help and support each other in manifesting our dreams as well.
Hmm. Many people don't really understand what that means to come from a place of your heart.
Yeah.
And I know that that's, you know, not an easy conversation to sort of just bring up, but, you know, what are your feelings? What are your guidance? Because you are... you do this professionally as well in that you offer life coaching for people. What is your thoughts on opening our hearts?
Yeah, you know, I think that we have, a lot of people live in their heads, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And our head is, of course, great, and we need our heads. But if we only live from our minds, you know, we want to see the logic. And there's a lot of life that's not about logic. And to live from your heart, I think... Everybody has a heart, and everybody can connect to it and go in your heart. And the simple question, like, what feels good to you? What do you feel, or what are you passionate about? That's where you connect to your heart. And it's like we've gone on the road that we think with our mind we have to figure everything out. And, you know, in my story about how we left Holland and gave up our house, our wealthy life, our jobs, our everything, because coming from the heart, deeply in my heart, I felt this is what we have to do. And had I gone in my mind, I mean, the logic would stop me right there, because of course the logic is like, you have no job, you won't find work, none of the kids spoke a word of English. We knew nothing. We just felt from the gut, from the heart feeling, this is the path I walk. And I think everybody, you know, sometimes we get away from it. We get too much in our head and want to figure it all out. But if we give over a bit, we can learn that, connect to our heart. Only maybe as easy as, you know, put your hand on your heart and feel. What are you feeling at this moment? If I ask the people in my coaching, if they put their hand on their heart and, you know, you take a breath and, you know, the listeners might even want to do it, put your hand on your heart and think, you know, what is the truth of your heart? If you followed the truth of your heart, where would that take you? And I think we can all connect to that. Mm-hmm. But it's a learning. it's a learning to go from our mind to the heart. And I mean, that's in inches probably the shortest journey, but in our life it's the longest journey. You know, that line to go from your head to your heart and then connect the two. That's beautiful if we can do that. But that's how I, you know, to speak for me, live a very fulfilled life doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that, you know, everybody was following this. And I mean, it seems like it was definitely your vision and your dream. And obviously, in your family, you're probably the one that goes mostly with what you are feeling and what you are acknowledging deep within you. So your journey, yeah.
And my husband was, of course, the first idea. He had a very, you know, he's an entrepreneur, and he had started his business in Holland, and we came from Taiwan, and we lived in Holland, and we got our kids there and developed our business, and he had a very, you know, he was just getting really on top of that wave and really bringing forth his dreams. And then, you know, to say let go of everything, because I really feel deep in my heart we're meant to let go of all of this and go to America. I mean, that took a little more of him, of course, probably because men also, you know, are more used to use their minds and heads to figure things out. Then for me, it was like, yeah, we go, you know, this is it. I know, I've heard the calling, we got to do this. And I had full trust that the universe would support us, that somehow, probably it wasn't easy, but we're here still. It's 8 years ago we came. But yes, you're right. It was for me the easiest. And my kids, of course, followed because they trusted that what, you know, what we chose would be good for them.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting story for sure. And you sort of started, you know, the story of you, you know, going on the holiday and how that sort of came about, and your faith in, you know, doing the holiday with five kids and not that much money and not knowing how you or what you were going to be doing. And I mean, it's just faith for sure.
Yeah, it was a lot of faith. But what was so interesting, Laurie, was that, you know, I one morning I had this epiphany, like, it was so clear. I really got that feeling like we have to leave. We're going to America. We should start our life over there. And then I said to Seep, my husband, we talked about it, and we said, okay, let's just go to America first to see, you know, if the kids don't resonate with the country at all, you know, we might go later. But just let go on holiday first. And fair enough. The phone rang a few days later, and my friend Anatine invited us to stay at her renovated barn in Long Island. So, you know, things start falling in place.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that opportunity, and we decided, okay, we fly to America. But we had no idea, you know, where do you look if you think of living in the country here? Where do you go? So mm-hmm. we thought, okay, then the sign is we go to the East Coast. And where did we go then? And we had no plan whatsoever, because in Europe we never, you know, we just hopped in the car, put a tent in the back of the car and went wherever the sun was shining. We would camp out and have our holiday. But here we rented a camper, a 9-sleeper, and we just toured around and we drove to Canada. We had no plan, and we said, the house has to find us. there's a house for sale, wherever that is, it has to find us. We can't look for a house because, you know, we don't even know where we want to live. And that's exactly what happened. And that was an amazing journey. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And then you move on to, you know, your youth, and you start back sort of at the beginning when you first started really following, you know, your faith, where, you know, you decided that you would conquer your fear of spiders. You decided you would go off to Israel and Japan. And I mean, you really, you got that part of you that, you know, would acknowledge the different places you needed to be and just go.
Yeah, I had a tremendous amount of faith. I just packed a little bag, and then I would go and think, you know what, it might be good for me to go to Israel. And I lived in Israel, and I lived in the desert with the Bedouins, and I had the most amazing things happen to me. And for me, everything was still so new. And the only game I did play throughout, wherever I traveled, because I usually only booked a plane ticket, was like, okay, universe, God, source, you be there for me because, you know, I'm packing my bags and I know I'm supposed to do this. You help me. And, you know, even in Africa where, you know, I could have lost my life in the jungle.
Yes.
When we were stopped by this military base and, you know, I had, you know, we were at gunpoint, guns pointed at my face. And I don't know why they didn't keep us there, because when that happened, I felt like this is exactly how you can read in the newspaper later, like two blonde Dutch girls disappeared in the African jungle. You know? But then I, you know, had faith that, you know, it didn't even cross my mind I could die.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fascinating to, you know, you write it and then read back and think, yeah, it's been a journey, Japan or Egypt, all these adventures, and there was always this big support of the universe, either through people who showed up or certain circumstances or, you know, whatever way, but all, you know, because, of course, we're all connected.
Yes. And so that was sort of your outer trail.
Yes.
And that outer trail that you wove, you know, brought you eventually to an inner trail. You know, there has to be a lot of women out there going, okay, so how did you get two husbands?
How did I get to the man of my dreams, you meant?
Well, yeah.
Like, yeah, it was, how did I get two husbands? Is that what you said?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, well, the first one was a Dutch guy I met in Holland, and actually this is a great, great guy, and we married. Probably for me it was too early, but then again, I had faith that it was probably the right thing. He was crazy about me, and he was transferred to America because of his job. And he said to me, marry me, because otherwise you can't come. And I thought, marry? Marry you? Oh, I never thought of that. And I kept thinking and thinking and trying to figure it out with my mind. And my mind couldn't come up with an answer because I didn't know if he was the right one. My mind didn't know. I really didn't know. And then I thought, well, maybe I have fear to commit. Well, that's not good. He's a nice guy. So, yeah, I don't know why I wouldn't, you know, I kind of lived together with him. So I married him and we went off to America, and then we lived in Singapore. And then I had a hockey tournament, a field hockey tournament in Indonesia. As the Dutch women group was sent to Indonesia to play field hockey, and people from all over, you know, Asia, all these teams came, and, you know, in the place I least expected it, I meet this guy, Siep, and somebody introduces me to him, and I shake his hand, Laurie, and I hear this very loud and clear voice inside of me, like, this is the man of your life. I was like, what? And I was married and I was happy and I wasn't thinking of divorce. I was just living my life and, you know. And then I hear this voice very loud and clear, and I let go of the handshake, and I'm like, wow, what is this? And I mean, long story short, I'm married over 20 years with him now, and we have 5 kids, but, you know, it was quite a... There's a story to that, of course, written in the book, how that all happened. But that was, again, you know, my mind couldn't have thought of that, but my heart was very clear.
Yes.
My soul was very, very strong in this. And I had faith that apparently then that's the road I follow. That's how I live my life. I go with that, and I take huge risks to be true to that.
So part of your, I guess, your journey, the inner trail, you know, began with reading Shirley MacLaine's book, Dancing the Light.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because as I describe in the book, there's this outer trail where I discovered, you know, I traveled through all the countries and the whole world, and I found my faith, and then I, you know, suddenly got the book Dancing in the Light from Shirley MacLaine, and she talked about reincarnation, and she talked about the journey of the soul, and I read it, and I was like, oh, now I understand what it's all about, and it kind of clicked, and it was like the light was on. That's how it felt. I was like, this new world opened up, and it was very interesting, because after I read that book, I wanted to kind of meet her or do what she did and follow her trail. And then right after that, I read the book. I think a week later, my boyfriend then was transferred to America. So there was no coincidence there. So I was like, whoa, got to go to America. So then, you know, I married him and we went to America for a year.
Now, in this whole story, there were times that were very challenging for you, and there was a time when you'd already met your husband now, and, you know, he wasn't ready, and so you had to come back, and you were homeless, and, you know, it was a difficult journey. And I think, you know, why don't we talk about that? Because I think a lot of people, you know, are experiencing, you know, similar areas in their life where, you know, things aren't running smoothly. And what do you do when stuff like that happens?
Yeah, you know, the faith I had was strong, because I knew when I decided to leave my first marriage and in the end go to Taiwan, where I wasn't married, of course, to him. I became homeless because I had nothing anymore, and my husband cut off all money, everything, and I had nowhere to live. And Siep said, well, you can't come to Taiwan because first you've got to be divorced. Well, I walked around on the streets in Holland and I had nothing. And it was an amazing experience, because the good thing was that I still felt that there was support, that the universe supports us. And in challenging situations, you know, you can feel victim, or you can still feel responsible for creating your life. And instead of, you know, going in complete despair, I was very, so to say, faithful or hopeful that something would show up, and that I could somehow still be the creator of my own life, which indeed happened. I mean, I got a lawyer, pro deo, and I was able to find ways to live and stay with friends and all that. And in the end, being homeless was an amazing experience, because I had to get this certificate of, it's basically in Holland to translate it, it's incompetence to live. And nobody can get that unless you live under the bridge forever and you have no paperwork whatsoever. And I couldn't show them anything. And they gave me this certificate. And I could get anything for free. It was like I had never experienced more abundance in my life than the moment I had nothing and I was given that certificate of incompetence to live. It was a very contradictory, but you know, the other side of the coin experience. But, you know, to come back to living in this time and experiencing loss, you know, job loss or health or whatever is going on, I truly feel that this time is an exciting time for the development of our strength and our soul to bring more out of us. I think in adversity, there's always an opportunity to open new doors, because apparently doors are closing, and we have to, I think, look deeper in ourselves, like, okay, what do I do now? There's this enormous source of creativity in us that can come up with new things. We really are called to let go of the old, and I'm not saying it's easy, no, absolutely not, but I can also see the good part in it.
Right. And so, you know, many of us don't understand this whole concept of, you know, what it means to be a victim, where we feel, you know, our lives, we don't have control, and that people outside of us tend to do things to us. And, you know, how do you shift that perspective to understanding that you have created everything in your life?
Well, I think one factor is that there need to be some openness. I mean, some people are don't want to go there, and that's fine, but it's just a more painful journey. You can choose if you feel like, you know, either your parents did it, or the government did it, or your husband did it, or your wife did it. Everybody does these things to us. Then we're really a victim. Then we can't help it, right? How can we change our situation if somebody else does it to us?
Mm-hmm.
If we're like, you know what, and I have a lot of power inside of me too to change situations or to make new choices, then it's a better point of view. I think it feels better, and then people can immediately feel that in themselves, I think. To shift that perspective, well, I would say there need to be at least a little bit of willingness to go there or to try it out. Say, well, and what if you just try it on? That, you know, to grab the whole concept of you're the creator of your own life, which I truly believe in, but that might be too big. But to go maybe a little baby step and say, well, what would be then an empowered choice for you to make? Because you still have the freedom of choice.
Right.
And even if you don't feel you have the freedom of choice, you have the freedom to choose your attitude. And that's huge. You know, that can shift the whole perspective of a situation.
Sure.
And, I mean, I host for free a gratitude call every morning.
Mm.
And I do that with the purpose to help us shift from maybe even feeling a victim or life overcomes us to shift it in a bigger way, like, you know, life can happen through us. If we can see the gift, if we can live with gratitude for all the good that there is, because there's so an enormous much of good in life. That's a step that, you know, and if people go to my website, which probably is mentioned on your show as well, they can, you know, click in and see the number of the gratitude call, and everybody can join. It's every morning from 7 till 7:30, and learn, you know, learn to express gratitude, because it's such a great, great, beautiful thing to start the day.
Mm-hmm. Truly. Yeah, I'm sure that you get a lot of questions, as I do, as to how you can possibly say we create our lives when, you know, I've just been fired, or, you know, I have no money, or, you know, my husband just divorced me and kicked me out, or, you know, all the different things that can happen in our lives, or, you know, that one of the, you know, the one that people have the most difficulty with is, you know, an illness, and especially, you know, a devastating illness that seems to take over. And, you know, and a lot of people just, you know, have that doubt, and it's really...
Yeah.
I don't want to say challenging.
You know, and it's very true what you're saying. And the point is, with what gives me always trouble myself, if, you know, there's something coming up, and if I want to go to the why, like, why is this, why did I create this? You know, you don't want to go into guilt here, like, oh, I created it. The why is not even so important. It's more like, how do you deal with it? And it's just a lot easier if you look in the present moment. There is a situation which is very tough. If you go into why, you go crazy. It's too hard. If you go into, okay, and how can I be the empowered creator in this moment and take action instead of now feeling totally wiped out and it overcame me? I think that's where, you know, where it helps to get the power inside of you actively involved. Because the why, the mind, we don't know why it happened. I mean, there's an enormous big holographic picture, probably, you know, even if you go back to the evolution of the soul, maybe where we still need to learn things or encounter things or karma or, you know, really God knows, and we don't. And we certainly don't want to go into blame, like, see, now I created cancer or I created this, there's different factors to it, which we probably cannot all figure out, but to grab yourself and say, okay, what can I do now?
Right.
I think that helps.
And when you find that you're going through something, you know, what is it that helps you move forward?
What helps me move forward is that I have to surrender to a certain situation instead of trying to change it, you know, thinking, okay, this is what it is now. Let's surrender here. And yeah, I go to my core belief that in the end it all be well, and that the universe will support, and that there is a solution which I maybe don't see yet. We were at the point of 2 years ago, we had invested in I don't want to mention,
no.
Because there's other persons involved in somebody else's business, let's say. And we had mortgaged our whole house on that. And the person was going to go bankrupt. Mm. And I'm like, gosh. I mean, it means we lose all our money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of saw it in a way that I thought, you know, it's almost so interesting if this would happen, because I can hardly believe this is going to happen. But then there will be, you know, I don't know, I give over. I have to surrender to this and see what's going to happen, because I won't die. You know, I don't believe life is about survival. I really don't. So I have that faith that then a solution will appear. Life will happen and show us what's next. I think we judge so much. Like, this is not good, that's not good, that's good, that's not good. So then, you know, if we kind of more allow to see what unfolds, it's easier.
Mm-hmm. And that's really a challenging thing to do, because our minds
yeah.
want to get involved, our egos want to get involved, we
yeah.
try to figure out solutions on our own, we try to do everything, because in a way we're trying to control our lives instead
yeah.
of live for our lives. Like, we're forcibly trying to create, because that's what we're being told, is we're creating our lives. So a lot of times we forcibly try to create.
You know, I can give an example, which mm-hmm. at the moment it occurred, I just didn't get it. And it took me 2 weeks to get over it. We, as we talked before the interview took place about the green card, we came here and we had a 3-year visa and we could extend it and la-di-da. Then we had to apply for the green card. And we have all these 5 kids here who go to school and, you know, they're completely Americanized. And 2 years ago, first the green card was rejected, and then, you know, whole story to it, but then we applied again and we thought, now we really get it. And then in that summer, they rejected the green card. And we totally, I absolutely did not understand why they did that. And in the meanwhile, my son had been applying, who was 18, for all these great schools here, business schools, and you know, $45,000 schools, and he was going to go there, and that was clear to him. But then I discovered that we did not get, because we didn't have the green card, we did not get any financial aid. So that completely changed this picture around, and I said to him, well, we said, there's no way, you have to go to Holland, we can't pay your school. Which was at first devastating to him, but then we had to look in those options, so he went. He went last year. Now, because he went, my daughter, who was fully planning on studying here, but of course still, because we don't have the green card, she can't go to any colleges with, you know, which are very costly. She could go to a state school, and she was accepted to UMass, and all good. But then because her brother is there, and he invited her over, and she saw the college life there, and now she left this summer. So later on, when they rejected us, I said, so I don't get it. We're not supposed to live in America. I really don't get it. I made all the effort to come here, and now we got to go. And I was fighting it, and I said, you know, I want to go and stay here, and in the end, I could see why we were rejected, and we could still reapply, so we were still here. But it was probably because it was meant that my children are going to study in Holland. At that point, I was forcefully trying to control the situation, and I wasn't happy with it. And then now I can see a bigger picture of why it was. But yeah, our egos are pretty much on top of it, and you know, we heard a month ago that now our green card is accepted, and that was actually at the point that I was totally okay with leaving. I thought, okay, you know, I fought so hard to stay here and get that green card. What if the universe doesn't want us here? We'll go. And, you know, now we are kind of granted that green card.
So once you let go of that attachment...
It's hard because the ego and my ego, you know, one thinks a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's a life lesson to learn on and on and on. And sometimes it goes a different way, which is better for us. And we learn more, but it's not easier, so to say.
Right. So in your book, there are a lot of powerful life lessons. What would you say are the five most important lessons we can take away?
The five key lessons, I think they're woven through the whole book and through all the stories, you know, of the inner trail and the outer trail, are that no dream is too big. That's the first one. The second one is the universe supports your biggest dream. You're always safe, even when you reach as far as you possibly can. The third one is let the voice of your soul take the lead, and don't let logic take the lead, or fear will block you. You know, as you read through the whole book, that when you tune into your inner voice, you move from fear to faith.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is roadblocks and detours are opportunities for growth. And, you know, we all go, of course, in our lives, and usually those are the moments that we grow the most, and I see it even more as stepping stones.
Yeah.
And number five is surrender activates miracles. If we can surrender, you know, faith bridges the gap between your aspirations and the manifestation of your dream. And it's truly usually, you know, in that moment of you plant the seeds, which I love in New England here, where, you know, you plant the pumpkins, I don't know when you plant the pumpkins, months and months before, and then you have to have faith that in the fall you get these gorgeous, beautiful pumpkins coming out of the ground. But in that time between, if you lose your faith, you know, you lose your dream. So to say it again, no dream is too big. The universe supports your biggest dreams. Let the voice of your soul take the lead. Roadblocks and detours are opportunities for growth. And surrender activates miracles. And
how do we know when it's the voice of our soul?
What?
How do we know when it's the voice of our soul?
You know, the voice of our soul is that voice that I think we can all tune into. It's that sometimes that those little inspirations you get, it communicates through the heart. It's It's that little lead you get, you know, when your heart, when you truly feel like, oh, you know, I would want to go there, or I really would want to do this. It's that voice that makes you happy. And if you go in logic, you know, then you lose that voice. The voice of the soul is very pure, very simple, and it only speaks in, you know, as you can read in the book, in only two letters, like, go. You know, you want to know an answer, you know, and I like these elaborate, beautiful answers, and I only get yes. it's pretty simple. And I've followed, you know, I've tuned into that voice. But of course, you know, I have my challenges too sometimes, because then fear is louder, or the ego is louder, and I really have to sit down with myself and put my hand over my heart and ask myself, is this what I'm supposed to do? And then I hear yes. Yeah.
And the roadblocks. I mean, we all have roadblocks. How do we start to see them as the gifts? How do we, you know, see them as opportunities to grow?
The roadblocks, you know, they can appear in all different ways. And if, say, you have a dream you hold dear in your heart and something comes up that seems like a roadblock, it doesn't mean that you have to let go of the dream.
Right.
It's more that you're like, oh, you know, how badly do I want this dream? And is this roadblock, you know, and a roadblock can be in the form of a belief, like, oh, maybe I'm never good enough. And that can show up by somebody criticizing you. And you can stop right there, or you think, you know, could be an opportunity for growth here. I need to work on myself and you know, go deeper and see that I can do this. Or in the form of, like, our green card, it was denied. Well, I had to learn to go surrender deeper and not so forcefully want to make something happen. I think they're stepping stones. And yeah, there are roadblocks. You know, when you go on a journey and you drive to California, you know, maybe you're led another way, and maybe that road is even better.
Mm.
It, for me, it's just important not to stop right there. It's like staying persistent, staying focused on your goal. What do you want? Where do you want to go? And keep going. And maybe at first you get around on the left side or on the right side or over it, or you ask for help, but it's not a dead end. I mean, the roadblock, if you turn around, yes, it is.
So you do transformational life coaching, and
yeah,
that's what you do. And, you know, what do you see as the biggest difficulty for people to face when they want to pursue their dreams?
I think they have doubts. Mm. They doubt if they can really do it, or if they want to figure out how. But I encourage everybody to, if you're passionate about something, you know, the doubt is the mind that will say, well, you'll never be able to reach this, that people then give up. It's, I think the biggest roadblock is to stay focused and stay on course, and not, you know, turn around or think, you know, maybe it will never happen. And what I say to people is, there's three key things. If you really want to go for that life of your dream, you check your beliefs.
Yeah.
Are your beliefs aligned with your vision? And then you look into your... You know, what I love for people, can you surrender the timing and the outcome of your dream? Because usually, you know, we think it has to happen then and then. Sometimes it's just very different. Surrender, you know, you do the work and then you surrender. And then what I, and of course, I'm a great advocate of, is practice giving gratitude as a daily habit. You can give gratitude in advance for what you want to reach, but live a grateful life. That brings your frequency so high up. But yeah, like I say, the beliefs are a big factor in, you know, What do you believe about yourself? What do you believe about life?
Mm-hmm. And I beliefs, a lot of them, we have contradictory beliefs. We have, you know, beliefs that are very unconscious to us. You know, what do you recommend when people, you know, come up with a belief that is completely contradictory to what they're wanting?
You know, we ask, like, does this belief serve you? Or if it doesn't serve you, can you let it go and replace it with a new belief? Our beliefs are key. To me, I work a lot and a lot of with beliefs, and with every client I work with, we create belief statements that are healthy and that are nourishing and that are, you know, that build their trust, because usually in moments of doubt, you know, we go back to our old beliefs, like, see, you know, life isn't good, or life doesn't work, or, you know, it's not going to happen, or I'm not good enough, or I don't have enough money. And then I help people to rewrite their beliefs and make them conscious about beliefs.
Good.
You know, often when we have a problem or a challenge, we can ask ourselves, what kind of beliefs do I have? Why is this not working? And then, can I let go of that belief? Does that belief serve me? And often it doesn't. And if, you know, of course, if you have, say you had these five beliefs, like universe supports your highest dream, no dream is too big, you can trust the voice of your soul, roadblocks are opportunities for growth, and, you know, if I surrender it, it will activate miracles. You know, those beliefs will bring you far. If you say the universe is a very unsafe place, well, I can understand why you wouldn't dare to take the leap.
Mm-hmm.
Totally understand. And then we would look into, where did you get that belief from? And, you know, we can look at the past, like, where you, how was your environment? How did you grow up? And if you grew up with parents who were very fearful or had a lot of beliefs about, you know, money or whatever beliefs there were, you know, of course, then you have these beliefs installed of you. But the good news is you can let go. And you can create new beliefs and say, you know, the universe supports me. And I'm nourishing the belief that life is good and life helps me. And I think, you know, when we came here in Rockport, we booked our flight, and, you know, all the stuff was shipped in big containers, and it took months to reach America. And because we were so busy organizing our life and saying goodbye to everybody in Holland, I couldn't go as far as what will happen when we actually arrive. I was like, you know, I got to surrender to that. I have no idea. We had five little kids and a dog, and I thought, let's just get there. We got here, and of course, this house, this big Victorian house here, was completely empty because the furniture was for 2 months on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have the energy to worry about it or stress about it. How would our life start here? It was just one blank open space. And the good news is, because I believe that we'll get support. We'll see. And amazingly enough, because we didn't worry, the people who lived in this neighborhood were worrying, like, but how, this family of seven, how are they going to live here? They have no chair, they have no lamp, they have nothing. So people put beds in this house, and there were blankets, and there was a fridge with food, and there were some lamps and chairs, and this is amazing. But, you know, if you would say it's scary, it's all not going to work, you know, then probably nothing would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Our beliefs are so important, and we can change them. That's the good part. We really can change our beliefs. And that's, of course, in my work as a coach, I help people with that. I'm dedicated to help people to create an extraordinary life like I did and do.
Right. So in your book, there's a chapter, a portion that talks about, you know, what happens when you don't think anymore.
Yeah. That's that's the chapter where, I mean, that blew me away as well. I had skin cancer, and I was operated on my head, and I had a huge scar on my head, and I had no idea it was such a big operation.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was that, and I really don't know if it had anything to do with the anesthesia, as I write in the book, I still don't know, or if it was just what happened to me at that moment. I was operated on my, came home, and you know, I had to be careful not to move around too much, and it was very painful and all of that. But then the weird thing was that my whole head was numb. My skull was completely numb, and the whole part of my brain, which probably I used for you know, thinking and worrying and anticipating, that whole part kind of didn't work anymore. And at first I didn't even realize it because I was completely in the moment. And when I was thinking, it was like I had no thoughts of the past. Of course I could remember the past, but I wasn't like plotting anymore. I was completely in the present moment. And I remember clearly I got this phone call from a friend, and she said, oh, can John come over? And I said, you know what, I have no idea. And she said, oh, your head is so full. I said, no, my head is so empty, but I can tell you, let me walk to the calendar. And actually, it was so beautiful, because normally I would think, oh, but maybe there's not enough time, or I have to go shopping, or do this or that. I walked to the calendar, and I said, yeah, John can come over. I see all the spaces blank between 2 and 5. Let him come over. And it was unbelievably amazing, because I had 5 kids, and 1 kid I was breastfeeding, all these little kids. And I functioned completely in the present moment. I was 100% there. I was open to everything what was in my space, so to say, but I didn't stress and worry about all the details anymore. And for example, I remember I had this wonderful conversation with a friend one day, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I look at my clock, it's dark. Oh my God, I should have gone pick up my daughter for half an hour ago. And what about food? And the doorbell rang, and here's my friend, and she said, oh, I thought, you know, I'll bring you food. I had extra pizzas, and here's your daughter, because I thought, why don't I bring her back as well? So where I let go, and there was no worry, the universe kind of brought it to me. It was really, it was beautiful. It unfortunately only lasted a few weeks, but it was a clear example of when we let go of all that control, things will be okay.
Right.
And you know, sometimes it's just a wonderful reminder. If we think and think and think to control, and, you know, life is beautiful if we can let go of that more. But yeah, thank you for reminding me of that chapter. It was quite an amazing time.
Mm-hmm. And are you able to, you know, bring those moments back? And I know we all do to a certain extent, where we can, you know, be fully present at certain times. But it is hard to, you know, hold that space or to create those moments all the time, because life sort of happens and we sort of get caught up in it.
You know, I like it you bring that up, because it's perfect also for me at this moment. It's the awareness, and where we have to practice awareness and be conscious that this is so, you know. Sometimes we just, you know, keep running and think we have to be everywhere in time, instead of just going more in the flow of what's in front of us. And then in the end, everything works out anyway. And it's just a beautiful reminder. And me, myself, also have to be mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I don't know if you've already mentioned this or talked about it with the other 5 important lessons of the book, but, you know, when you empower, you're very passionate about empowering others. When you're helping to, you know, assist empowering others, what are those steps that you recommend?
Yeah, it's in line with your other question, where, you know, I say to people, there's five steps to life empowerment, and those five steps, and I'm sure there are more, but if you're aware and you practice these five things, I mean, you're doing a pretty good job. And I say practice awareness. And with awareness, I talked about beliefs, like invest only in the map that leads you to the place you truly want to go. You know, what's your thoughts? What's your beliefs? Are they in line with what you want to bring about in life? That awareness is so important. And then I'll say, practice to move out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
You know, take a new road that gets you to a new place. And, you know, let go of the past and allow the new to come in. Because often, you know, we can stay stuck in a situation where we don't feel the joy. And, you know, dare to take that leap to expand your horizon.
But when we push ourselves out of our comfort zone, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. You know, and then I say be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Oh. Because it is. You know, when you learn skating, that's very uncomfortable at first. But imagine how wonderful it is if you can, you know, make those pirouettes on the ice. Everything we want to learn, you know, you have to go out of our comfort zone. And it's hard, but that's really very important if we want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll, of course, say practice letting your heart lead the way. You know, trusting your heart. You know, I know you reached it safely, the destiny of your dreams, and life is not about survival. It's really, you know, it's about loving what you do.
Mm.
And then, you know, practice the power of choice. And I said that before. The power of choice means, you know, you have the power to take the road that leads to your heart's desire, and you can exercise your free will. Sometimes we feel like, oh, I'm powerless, I can't do this. You know, you have the power of choice, and there are no wrong choices. They have different outcomes. And what I find beautiful is that we always have the choice of attitude. We can choose our attitude, no matter what our situation is. And you know, make the extraordinary choice to get the extraordinary results. And I've seen that in my life. That's definitely when I move out of my comfort zone to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then practice surrender.
The big
one. There is a part where we have to let go and let God.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace the unknown, because that's where new possibilities arise and miracles happen. Yeah, so if you have those five, if you practice those five steps, it will really enhance the quality of your life. But of course, it takes practice, and we got to build those muscles.
Mm-hmm. Well, Saskia, it's been a lovely pleasure talking with you and chatting with you and getting to know you better. How can people get a hold of you?
People can go to my website of the book, and that's www.suitcasefullofaith.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say it again. It's www.suitcasefullofaith.com. Probably the easiest way, if you want to find more about me, if you go to that website and there's like a button where you can click Saskia More, and then that leads you to, I will mention it, my professional website, which is www.illuminatedtransformation.com.
Hmm.
illuminatedtransformation.com. And then again, if you Google my name, or, you know, saskiagowell.com will lead you as well to both websites.
Great. Well, it has been a great pleasure. Is there anything that you would like to leave us with?
Take the leap. Go for your dreams. And follow that. That's You know, it makes me always fulfilled if I can ignite any spark in anyone to, you know, and that's what I hear so much from people who read the book, and that creates so much joy in my life, because that's why I wrote it, to inspire people to dream big in these challenging times. And I've heard amazing stories from people who read the book and felt like, you know what, if you can do it, I can do it, from, you know, adopting a child, or from, you know, moving to another country, or writing a book, or you can go as far as you like, but if I can ignite that spark, you know, my life's fulfilled.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking.
All right. So we will be back next week. Actually, next week I will be starting a new show with CBS Radio Psychics on Air, and that will air the first show on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. So I look forward to connecting with you then, and thank you, Saskia.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.